Therapy Insiders is sponsored by WebPT, the ultimate EMR. Why are they the ultimate? Well, one of the reasons is because they're going to help you with ICD-10, the transition to the new codes. You need to know it, and you probably don't know it as well as you should. Check them out at www.webpt.com/podcast to find out more about ICD-10 for a free demo and a lot more. Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders from the UpDoc Media family. I'm Dr. Gene Chirac-Abrad here with Dr. Joe Palmer and Dr. Erson Religioso. Now, I can honestly say it really has been a while now since I've said that. I've repeated that line a few times over the last several weeks, but like last two episodes, I've been solo. I've been solo casting, and it's been somewhat invigorating. But I really did miss you guys. So welcome back.
Oh, I see how it is.
Yeah. Thanks. It's good to be back. I thought you made the last one, Joe.
No, I was out. I couldn't make it. Gene kept us going there. Appreciate it.
To be fair, the guests that we had on, Heidi Janenga and then Andy DeLau, or Cancer Geek, I didn't really have to say much. All I had to was just ask a couple simple questions, and then they pretty much took over because they were very interesting and they had a lot of awesome insights. So you picked two awesome guests to miss, which is good and bad.
Well, it's good. It's good that you missed us.
But, it's a good thing you record these so that we can listen to them.
That is true. That would be kind of counterproductive if I didn't record them, but. I like to be productive.
Right. At least. Great podcast, only to be heard by two people ever.
That's one of my fears in life. Is like I tweet out, you know, we have this person on, and all these people ask Twitter questions, and then we have this awesome podcast. And my fear is that I look at my screen and I never push the record button. It's like, hey, right. We had this awesome pod. Oh boy.
Oh, that's definitely happened to me before when I filmed like an amazing 45-minute live case at one of my Eclectic Approach courses, and all I get was like us BSing 2 minutes before the video and then like us BSing after the video too.
It's good. I'll tell you a quick story. That we, when I was in college, my girlfriend, who's my wife at the time now, took me to Disney World because up to that point I've never been. Yes, I know it took me until college to go to Disney World. Because every time my parents were going, or every time there was a trip, I had a sport, something going on. I played baseball, I played football, or I was training, so I never got to go. So I was really excited. I was really looking forward to going to Disney World. And, obviously I wanted to see Mickey Mouse. I mean, you go to Disney World, you want to see Mickey Mouse. That's just how it goes. And, so, you know, we walked around, we had a lot of fun. It was great. It was a great experience. And finally at the end, we're going to see Mickey at his, you know, at his house. And at that time we had a video camera that still actually used videotapes, the little ones, for those of you that wonder what video camera came from, the video part. And so we're going, we're standing in line, and, you know, I see Mickey Mouse there, and yes, okay, look, I know the ridiculousness of it, a person dressed up in a costume, but it was freaking Mickey Mouse, you know. It's my first time in Disney World. And I give her the camera. I said, okay, record me with Mickey Mouse. And she, you know, she's excited. She's like, she's happy for me. And, you know, I meet Mickey Mouse and she records it. So then I was like, it was a great time. So then we get home and put the camera in, or the tape in, again, a tape. And get to that part and you see me, or you see my shoes. You see Mickey Mouse's shoes. You see camera coming up and turns off. So the camera was on when I handed it to her, and she thought it was off. So there's really no recorded evidence of me meeting Mickey Mouse, just me, my shoes, or somebody's shoes that looked like mine at the time, and Mickey Mouse shoes. I met some guy in Mickey shoes. That's my evidence, and that's ever since then, I still have had that fear because I was scarred by my wife when I went to Disney World for the first time.
Gene, you don't have to cry right now, okay?
Yeah, he still married her.
And I still married her. God bless her soul. You know, it's one of those things that...
Best thing that ever happened to you, Gene.
That's definitely not even a question about that. But still makes me want to go to Disney World and teach her how to use a camera, for God's sake. But bringing us back, the record button is hit, so we are live. And we do have another great guest. And Urson will keep the tradition of you doing the intros, but I have a feeling that even you can't butcher this name.
Yeah. Tonight joining us is Dr. Dustin Jones. I'd like to call him Indiana Jones and make some kind of relic kind of thing, but he's probably much younger than me. but Dustin is a PT who I encountered on Twitter, and I read a few of his blogs, and I was very, very impressed because he's all about doing kettlebells. He's RKC, and he'll talk about what that means and how he uses kettlebells and general principles like strengthening and rooting and a hard style form of training with a geriatric population, because unlike many who kind of speak my language, like SFMA and deadlifts and kettlebell swings, he is not working with an ortho or sports population. He is a home health therapist. So I thought that was really interesting because, you know, even the APTA white paper, when the APTA basically gets on board and says, we're not doing enough strengthening, that means we haven't been doing it for a long time. So I thought that he'd be an appropriate therapist to bring on because it's like, you know, anyone feels like any athlete or pretty fit person, like a gym rat can do these things, but Dustin does it with everyone.
Are you saying the APTA is slow?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I just feel like they may be a little less, maybe more reactive and less proactive. But I think they're getting better with that, definitely.
Well, especially they take their time.
They're careful. They're getting better. Listen, there's nothing wrong with calling out organizations as long as they're working towards something better. And we've had Sharon Dunn, the new president of the APTA, and she knows there's things to improve on, and she's very proactive about improving those things. So there's nothing wrong with saying that the APTA is slow at some things, because they are. And that's the only way
like three or four years ago that they were like, hey, we should stop using passive modalities and physical agents so much as primary treatments.
Well, let's not load it on them, okay, Urson? We already said they're slow. Let's not pile on here.
Both ways.
Let's not pile on. All right, Dustin, welcome to the show, man. Thanks for coming on. And you do kind of fill a unique niche with the kettlebells and the geriatrics. So
Yes. I am the black sheep of physical therapy.
So I really want to know, how often do you correct people when they call them kettlebells?
You know, I started correcting them, but then, you know, when I didn't say anything, it just became, you know, really humorous. Kettlebells, but also cowballs is a pretty common one. So, you know, I don't even say a word anymore. I just let them go with it. So
just
cowballs, kettlebells, whatever. Whatever works for you.
Rotary cup.
Yes, exactly.
Let's get this out of the way early then. Our hashtag Project PT for this week. Just tweet at us the funniest misnomers of physical therapy that you've heard. Kettlebells, rotor cuff, like Joe said.
Rotary cup.
Excuse me for mispronouncing your mispronunciation. I mean, come on now.
One of my patients' history said, I'm here for a labial tear.
Oh.
I said, oh, ma'am, could you point to the area where, you know, what's injured? She pointed to her shoulder. So it was all good.
Send those to our hashtag Pelvic Mafia gal, Sandy, Sarah, and I don't want to deal with that.
I'll interrupt real quick.
Yeah, go for
this
it, man.
Is somewhat pertinent. The best kettlebell reference I've had was this 89-year-old female. She was a farm girl from Indiana, and I walk in the door, and I had a 35-pound kettlebell, and I've been working with her for about a month, and she looks at me, and, you know, her eyes just go wide open because I'm carrying this instrument in. And she goes, ooh, your bowling ball sprouted ears. And that's all she said. That's all she said. So nice. It was great. Bowling balls, cowballs, kettlebells. So that's the same thing. So
that's pretty good. So what made you want to get into it? I mean, we usually don't ask a simple question like that, but I think it really warrants asking. Geriatrics, kettlebells, home health. I mean, that's a unique combination.
Yeah. Honestly, the reason I got into it was convenience. We talked before, I was in Martinsburg, West Virginia, in the Eastern Panhandle, and I was doing outpatient orthopedics. And, you know, I was doing the FMS, SFMA route, you know, really enjoying it, working a lot with runners. And my girlfriend then, my wife at the time now, she's an emergency medicine resident. And she matched at Ohio State University, or the Ohio State. I really don't say the, but...
Yeah, you got to be careful with that, man. We're going to get some angry emails for you just saying that.
So, yeah, that school in Columbus. So we're here now, and I was still wanting to be involved with an active population, but pursue more of the fitness route. So wanted to work in a gym, in a fitness facility, but also do some PT for people, you know, that are in pain or just, you know, want to move better and reach, you know, whatever goals they have. So I connected with Lori Kroc, who is in Columbus, and she actually had the first MoveNat gym. MoveNat is just movement in nature. It's just a fitness system that is kind of on the fringes. I'm not sure if anyone's heard of it amongst you all, but she had this gym I joined. We were kind of doing the half, you know, trainer, half PT. We were treating members that had pain or new members. And I quickly realized that in the fitness industry, you know, you got to put your work in to be able to pay the bills. And marrying a physician and being a physical therapist myself, you know, we kind of take on a little bit of debt. Just a little. So after, you know, a couple months, I realized, you know, I had to put my big boy pants on and you know, be able to pay the bills. So honestly, I mean, I feel kind of bad saying this, but I'm just going to be, you know, truthful. I wanted something that was flexible, that I could do what I perceived as easy as possible, and to get paid money. So home health fit the bill.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Yes.
How much student loan debt do you have between the two of you?
We do not have a lot compared to a lot of her classmates. I was fortunate. I came out with about 24,000. She had about 130,000. But a lot of her classmates are pushing around 250K.
Yeah, I've heard similar things. I mean, that's a brutal number. I mean, PT, right, we've had between 80 to 100. I know when I got out of PT school, I was hovering around 90,000 to 100. Ooh. And but you know, that was with the interest, because the interest was almost as much as the principal after everything's added up. So that's insane numbers.
It is insane.
You're right. I mean, there's nothing wrong with finding a job that you have to pay, right, because that a lot of people fall into that trap. I'd call it that. Fairly comfortably, and it's hard, especially if you have ambitions for growth and you have ambitions to be a business owner. You're kind of, a lot of people at least feel stuck, but that's not always the case. I mean, Joe, you're a business owner now in the PT clinic, and you didn't get away scot-free from those loans, did you?
No. You know, you got to put in the work, like Dustin said. I think that, you know, I was pretty fortunate. My wife's an accountant, so she helped us put the screws to those loans and just work at them. And you know, I took some PRN work and we've done well to pay them back as quick as possible. But I mean, yeah, it's just, you gotta put in they're there, they're not going anywhere. You gotta put in the work and you know, for her it was from the accounting standpoint, she just likes seeing the numbers go down, you know. And so you need to find little games to make whatever you got to do, but get it done. Get them off your plate, because that's it is a weight off your shoulders.
Yeah, it's brutal. I mean, you cry a little bit every month. You saw that bill come in. I was paying a mortgage every month, and then part of you dies every time that bill comes in. But like you said, that number goes down eventually, and you just accept it as it is, plan it out, and then do what you have to do. You know, do your life, do your business, and start paying it off. And if you don't, find a job. So you found this job, not really anticipating it. So how did you add the kettlebells, and how did you progress in that career? And is it still a job or is it more now?
The home health is definitely, you know, full-time gig. I'm definitely investing, you know, all my time into that. But kind of the genesis of it, when I was spending a lot of time with Lori at MoveNet, Ohio was the name of the gym. And at that time, she was pursuing her RKC1 Russian kettlebell certification with Dragon Door. They're kind of like the certifying body for that. There's also Strong First. They do SFG1, SFG2, and a lot of other stuff. But she was transitioning into kettlebells, and you know, I kind of went along for the ride. So as time progressed, I was just spending more time at the gym, got more practice, and as you know, she trusted me more and more, I started to teach classes. And so I would say my time in the gym, just as our financial situation became more of a reality, my time in the gym was progressively lowering. And as that was lowering, my commitment to home health progressively increased. So, as you know, I was getting more skillful with kettlebells, then, you know, I just started to think, you know, why am I not, you know, using this with the patients that I treat every day? And what really just opened my eyes was when, you know, I would have, you know, so many patients that I would evaluate and always try and just, you know, talk to them, ask them questions, get an idea of their perception of themselves, their issues, and also physical therapy. And I would ask them, have you had physical therapy? And, you know, they've all been through the ringer, you know, every setting of physical therapy they've been in. And a lot of them said, yeah, I did physical therapy. You know, I got on the bike, you know, I did some exercises when I was sitting down in the chair with some stretchy band. And then, you know, I had some pins and needles, electrical thingy with some ice or heat. And that was a very, very consistent, message that I heard. And I just thought there's gotta be more to this, especially in home health, than, you know, just seated therics with TheraBand and just walking around. So that's when I just started to try and implement, you know, what I knew, what I learned from the fitness industry, you know, with these older patients.
So before Urson asks you very critical clinical questions about kettlebells, I need to know, am I hearing a twang in your voice? Where are you from?
I'm from West by God, Virginia, Gene. Don't forget it.
You're now it all makes sense.
And I usually don't have a twang, but I'm sipping on a little bourbon. Shout out to Jerry Durham to that one. It kind of comes out a little bit. You know, it just kind of loosens the whistle a little bit.
So dang, I gotta start as we progress when we do this. Every time one of our guests is drinking, I just get parched. Like I think next time Gene actually starts talking, I'm gonna hit mute and grab a beer.
You should.
Just go now. Get it.
I want to hear. Now it's not time to ask me for me to ask some kind of pertinent heavy kettlebell question.
So, Urson, tell us about kettlebells.
Right. Well, you guys already heard me talk about kettlebells. Yeah, cannonballs. Dustin, tell me about the RKC, because basically I went for the baby RKC. Which would be the HKC.
What the hell is the RKC? Can we stop saying different letters and actually tell me what it means?
Dustin, tell us. I want to hear why and how you chose it and your journey up to that, because that is quite a certification. I mean, that is, you know, you're a beast. You did some crazy physical training for that. And I tried training for that. And I blogged about it for about a year, basically how much it screwed me up. I'd like to hear your story, because I like to hear these stories.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was crazy. It about broke me, too. It did. It broke my soul, but didn't break my body, I will say that. But in terms of picking, you know, the RKC, HKC, SFG, and whatnot, I did my HKC first, which was great. It's a a one-day course. You basically learn the fundamentals of hard style training, just kind of the traditional way to use a kettlebell. You go over some of the very basic movements. It's not very heavy on some of the more advanced moves, but it basically, you know, gives you a good foundation to be able to train on your own and to potentially, you know, teach other people. So Lori actually hosted that event. So I got to go, you know, because it was there at the gym where I was working. And then the same with the RKC. The RKC was a last second decision for me because, I mean, I'm right there with you, Urson. I never perceived that I would be able to do the snatch test, which you have a 53-pound kettlebell, or depending on the weight, you do a snatch, which you're basically from the ground, you're hiking the bell back between your legs, you explode your hips, and the bell goes straight above your head, and you repeatedly do that 100 times, and you have to do it in 5 minutes. And it was just, there's no way. I just never thought, you know, I could do it. And then the more I thought about it, the more I realized, you know, I need to do this, A, to push myself to see, you know, what I'm capable of or what I can do under pressure, but also to be able to put myself in that position at that certification, because it's 3 days of, you know, just you're critiqued on absolutely everything, all the different moves, how you teach, how you present yourself, and you gain a lot professionally, but also personally. So I was thinking about it, then Lori encouraged me to do it. So I just got after it, and honestly, the biggest thing was just consistency. In terms of training, it was consistency for me, because I'm one to, you know, just do whatever I feel like. So, like right now, you know, I don't have any training goals per se. So, you know, I'll walk most days. I may run. I may swing a bell or two, you know, do some get ups and whatnot. But when, you know, when you got something on the line like that RKC, you start to be a little more methodical with how you spend your time. And you use just a daily routine. And honestly, you know, it wasn't much. I would literally do 10 sets of 10 swings and cook my breakfast in between the rest periods, and then practice get-ups and skills on a few days a week and got through it. So, I mean, I barely passed by the skin of my teeth, really, because the crowd, the people there, the encouragement really helps you kind of break through that perceived barrier that you have when you think you can't go any further, that, you know, you can go that extra mile to achieve, you know, whatever goal it is. But for me, it was that snatch test.
Awesome. Yeah, that snatch test is brutal. And you know, basically, I probably, if I could have done all 100 on my left side, I could have passed. But I have too many asymmetries and weaknesses and motor control deficits on my right uncoordinated side, because I am super left-handed. And that's how I ended up, like, jacking up my wrist and going for a wrist fracture. I thought I had a wrist fracture. Then I thought I tore my abductor hallucis brevis, and then which apparently is common for people who do snatches, because the bell lands right there on your wrist.
Yes.
And then I ended up getting a cortisone injection, and then I discovered my own wrist reset for Duquerre veins. So that's basically my story for that. But I mean, I blogged about it like 3 or 4 times over the course of a couple years ago, and I think I almost went to the HKC around there, because I was supposed to go to one in Columbus 3 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
Then I just never did, because I was too jacked up.
Web PT is the ultimate EMR for physical therapy. You know that. One of the reasons is because they know ICD-10, and I don't. So I ask Heidi Janenga, COO of Web PT. Heidi, what the heck is ICD-10?
Well, ICD-10 is diagnosis codes on steroids. We're talking more than 68,000 codes. All HIPAA-covered entities must switch to ICD-10 on October 1st, 2015, or face claim denials. That's where WebPT can help. Our intuitive ICD-10 code selector is built right into our documentation platform, thus simplifying the patient diagnosis process. I encourage all of you to check it out. Visit webpt.com/podcast to request a free online demonstration.
I'm sorry, wait. You got an injection? How are you still allowed to be a PT?
Yeah. Well, you know, the story was basically I was so messed up. I couldn't even, like, when one of my kids came running toward me, I would get scared. Talk about fear avoidance for someone who normally considers themselves pretty tough. I did martial arts and all this stuff, you know, I was a rock climber, and I totally jacked my body up. But I mean, my wrist was so inflamed, I could barely move it. If one of my kids ran at me for a hug, I would like shudder in fear, because I knew I could pick them up, and I knew it was going to hurt like 9 out of 10. And I already, you know, I even stopped my business partner, because normally it's like when, you know, one of us are in a clinic and we're like, hey, can you have like 5 minutes to treat me right now? But you would never do that for a patient. I was like, look, we're going to make time. I'm going to actually book appointment on your schedule a couple times a week. So we did everything from like, you know, repeated motions to cervical manip to thoracic manip to ISTM along my radial nerve to taping my radial nerve. And I eventually started wearing a brace, and like nothing was making it better. Yeah. So then I, you know, I put on like a trench coat and sunglasses and a mustache. And, like,
did you ever
dyed my head?
Have you ever seen Tin Cup?
The physiatrist's office, and like sat there with patients that may or may not know me, and I got a cortisone injection. It was like 100 times better in one day. And then when it came back the next time, I was like, screw this PT, I'm just going to go get another cortisone injection. It came back because I started training. Because I started training again, and you know, between training again and then going to Disney and lifting strollers on and off a bus for like 5 days in a row, and then my basement flooding and carrying all the stuff out, it was just too much for my wrist. So I was like, oh, forget PT, I'll just go get a cortisone injection. Except for this time, it didn't work, and my wrist like swelled up even more. So then that's when I just kind of discovered that for de Quer veins, repeated wrist flexion and radial deviation seemed to reset it. And it was all my swelling and pain was gone in like 2 hours.
I'm going to edit this out and use it for blackmail. Whenever you say something I don't like, I'm just going to play a little snippet of you saying screw PT.
Hey, just that part, right?
Just that part. Nothing else.
Hey, eventually I learned that, well, you know, the first moral was like, sometimes you need a chemical push. And the second moral was like, and often that doesn't work again. Have you ever seen
the movie Tin Cup?
Yeah.
So you remember he's like a really good golfer, and then that woman came around asking him about stuff, teaching her to play golf, and she had like all these apparatuses that he was making fun of. And then when he started to lose his golf game, he started using all those apparatuses that he was making fun of in the first place. That's kind of what I'm picturing with you. Right. Like making fun. Yeah. Nah, cortisone injections, braces. And then you're just like all the braces on Amazon or since buying up.
Right. That's called desperation. Is what it is.
That's called being a patient.
Yeah. No, go ahead. I mean, I'm sure you went through this too, right?
I went through the same thing, but mine was more skincare with blisters, because I'm sure you went through this, Urson. But when you're starting to do really high volume kettlebell swings or definitely snatches, you know, you really got to take care of your hands. And if you tear one of your calluses and you have a blister, you know, you're out of commission, you know, for a few days at least, unless you have a good tape job. So I was scared to death of ripping a blister at this certification. I bought 4 different styles of gloves that were acceptable at the certification just to make sure, you know, that I did not rip one of those blisters. And I was definitely a little compulsive. But yeah, when you're in that situation, you know, where you're kind of desperate, you'll reach for whatever that, you know, you think will work.
Yeah, I was doing, I mean, if I had to do a long X distraction for a hip or, a P, you know, a simple kind of P to A on a patient, I couldn't even use 2 hands. I had to have a student do it, or I would just like pull on them with 1 hand, because my right arm, luckily, and then my non-dominant arm, it was useless. I mean, I could do nothing with it.
Man.
So.
And you're a lefty?
Total lefty. Super right brain, too.
That makes so much sense now.
Whoa, Gene. You got one here too, buddy.
Again, makes so much sense. West Virginia, lefty, Buffalo. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Some kinesiologists apparently think it's like it's some form of brain damage, because otherwise, why isn't it 50-50? I mean, it's not like 50-50, right? It's,
yeah, my wife would agree with that.
Smart woman.
Yep.
Most of our wives would probably think that about us, but
that's true. That's a good point. So how hard is it to implement kettlebells into a clinic? Like Joe, do you have any kettlebells at your clinic? I mean, is that something that interests you in an orthopedic manual therapy clinic?
It certainly interests me, and I actually asked Dustin some questions about the implementation of kettlebells for balance program, as well as some of the get-ups that he the sequencing for some of the floor activities. I think those are important for the elderly population especially. And right now, when we're doing our sit to stands, we're progressing them to like goblet type squats where they're holding dumbbells. But I mean, they can just as easily be doing that with a kettlebell. And I'm trying to just look for some advice as far as how you find best to start implementing them in a clinic.
Yeah. So, so you're outpatient ortho, correct, Joe?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. So I have not used them in that setting. So I don't want to act like, you know, I'm a kettlebell rehab guru. I've just used it in home health with, you know, homebound adults. So, but what, you know, I typically do, you know, I wait a good amount of time before I use a kettlebell because a lot of the older adults I work with, they have a lot of fear of falling, just fear of challenging themselves, you know, because a lot of them have been on the ground, haven't been able to get up, had to call Lifeline, you know, doors broken in, you know, just really traumatic experiences. So I typically my primary goal at the beginning is for them to be able to get to the ground and to get up from the ground, you know, with the use of furniture, you know, for the physical benefits, but mainly, you know, honestly, just for their confidence and for them to mentally, you know, buy into the concept that they can actually improve on their abilities. So without weight, you know, we'll work on that pattern. And in home health, you know, one of the things that was toughest for me coming from outpatient ortho is just to not really care as much about technique or form with different things. You know, if someone can do whatever the task is, whether it's getting off the toilet, getting up from the ground, you know, going down the steps, if they get it done and, you know, they're, you know, not going to break a leg or have, you know, severe pain afterwards, like, I'm happy. So we would practice that. And then, you know, as they progress, you know, say getting up from the ground, you know, if they have the shoulder range of motion with a lot of my patients, you know, they have a tough time getting above 90 degrees flexion, you know, on their shoulders. So I tend to not put too much weight on them once they, you know, come up to sitting with a get up. So we'll do baby get ups. So where, you know, we're going from your back or supine up to the elbow. And if they have that range of motion, we'll do it. So we'll just work on that transition. And I felt that that helps them a lot with that initiation phase of getting up off the ground that is typically, you know, the toughest for them. And then another stage. So after that, I'll probably take the weight away. But then I'll put the kettlebell back in their hands whenever they're in half kneeling. Once they've owned that movement where they can get up, you know, from half kneeling without weight, but, you know, sometimes I'll put it in their hand in the rack position. So where, you know, your elbow is tight, your forearm is vertical, your wrist is straight, you're holding the middle of the kettlebell handle and that kettlebell, you know, is resting, you know, on the outside of the wrist, and, you know, work on some, you know, half kneeling to standing, you know, progressions there. So that's the get up, you know, like what you're doing with the sit to stands, you know, the same thing, except, you know, we'll use a goblet squat. And then the other big thing is carries, lots of weighted carries, whether it's a farmer's, you know, carry with the weight on the side by their leg, whether it's in the racked position, or, you know, two bells, asymmetrical bells, double racked. I mean, there's lots of, you know, different variations, but the carries have been really effective with the patients, whether we just do it statically or whether, you know, we walk a little bit and I'm holding on to them with the gait belt. So that's been real helpful.
How are you dosing something like that? How are you finding the weight that's right for them? You brought in a 35-pound kettlebell to an 89-year-old lady, so I just...
It's... I mean, I definitely... have not, you know, researched this and submitted it to publications or whatnot, but typically what I'll do, I'm really diligent with monitoring vital signs. So I've got, you know, a little wrist blood pressure cuff, which I know isn't the most accurate, but it gives me, you know, some form of information.
What? PTs can monitor vital signs?
It, It is true, Gene. It can happen.
Are you kidding me? So there's other things aside from movement and manual therapy and other things that have actually a lot of evidence behind it, like blood pressure and heart rate things?
Yes, it's crazy. I even fill pill boxes for patients.
You know what? Don't bring your West Virginia craziness on this podcast. All right. Let's keep it real. Okay, buddy.
Okay,
let's keep it real.
We'll keep it real. All right, we'll keep it real. So after I slip them a mason jar of moonshine, I'll check their blood pressure, and then we'll do pulse ox to make sure their oxygen, at a good level. I'm talking to them a lot, just see how they're feeling, and just really trying to carry on the conversation, which I wouldn't, I wouldn't do that in an outpatient clinic because I'd want the patient to focus, on what they're doing. But I've had, in acute care, I had a few patients that, when I wasn't conversating with them, I didn't pick up that they were passing out on me and they, fell back into bed. So I've been kind of, very fearful of that. So I'll conversate with them just to make sure, they're okay. They're not dizzy. They're not lightheaded. And it just any symptoms that are different from, what I would perceive as normal.
Have you had any elderly people hurt themselves using the kettlebell?
I've not. I've been very conservative with the weight. So I'm not going out and doing swings with people with 50, 60 some pound weights. So they got to earn it. So I've got several kettlebells. I typically take about 5 or 6 with me in my car. And we'll, start off with a little 8-pounder and, work our way up, and it's real progressive. And I just take it real slow with them, make sure they're comfortable, make sure they're confident and, that they believe that they can do it. And, by the time, they're up to, 26 pounds, deadlifting off an elevated surface, 35 pound, kettlebell is nothing for them. So yeah, I've been good so far, knock on wood.
I'm actually interested in getting some and start using them to work out. Is there a place you recommend buying some?
There's several options, and I'm not aware of all the options. I live in Columbus, so Rogue, the fitness manufacturing company, is based here. So I'll buy their kettlebells. They're solid, but they have a rougher texture, kind of the gold standard. From what I perceive, Dragon Door makes their own kettlebells, and they're a good smooth surface. Their handle is proportioned a little different than Rogue's. So when you go to do overhead snatches, it's a little more natural with that handle. I think Strong First is also making kettlebells as well. And there's, I think, Onnit Academy, so all kinds. But I definitely wouldn't get super cheap ones, off Amazon. I would spend a little money, because if you put things in perspective, like the 53 pound kettlebell that I bought from Rogue cost me like $62, $63. I can use that literally, I mean, not necessarily for the rest of my life, but until, probably, 70 some years old, and that thing, will last forever. So It's pennies, when you think of it in perspective, if you're going to be a long time user of them.
Should I get
I was actually going to say get one off of Amazon, because I got all mine off of Amazon. But the thing is, I actually spent the same money. It's just that they were Prime. That's the only problem. Okay. when you buy them from other places, you have to pay for shipping because they're heavy, right? And they don't have shipping facilities all over the country like Amazon does. But I mean, I paid probably $60 for, my 50 plus pound bell, and it came Prime, and I got it in 2 days. So,
nice.
I mean, we tried to do the same thing for the clinic, but it looked like it was dropped 100 times, but you could also return it and get a full refund, and then Amazon will just send you out another one.
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as you get a good quality one.
Yeah.
Let's talk to our marketing people, Gene.
If you're just, like a recreational user, in the sense of, you're just going to swing a little bit 2 to 3 times a week, then yeah, cheaper bell will be okay. But if you're going for like the RKC, or you're wanting to do high volume, the little things will make a big difference in terms of the texture of the handle and the height of the handle in reference to the bell. So it depends. If you're going to use it just a little bit, yeah, go with Amazon. But You know, if you're going to go all out, you know, definitely, you know, spend a little bit of money and get some good ones for sure.
Should I get two or one?
That depends, you know, starting off. I did well with the 44 pounder starting off, and then, you know, probably within a month or so, I got a larger size. But each person's different, you know, just based on your size, your body type. The best thing, honestly, that I would do is just seek out an instructor, you know, a hard style instructor, you know, an RKC1, RKC2. There's also the SFG1, SFG2. But just seek someone out that can give you feedback, that's able to see how you're moving, see your body type, and to be able to provide, you know, feedback for you. Because, you know, you can search the YouTubes and see all kinds of pretty nasty videos of just people picking up a kettlebell and going after it. And it can get ugly if you don't have, you know, some good help with you.
Listen to me. I'm a movement expert. I do not need coaches or other people telling me how to move expertly.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah, I just do exactly what my patients do with kettlebells. I mean, I always tell patients, hey, look, you know, you want to go run a 5K, you want to run a marathon, but you don't just like walk onto a golf course and think you can just like, I'm going to be awesome at golf today because I'm just going to try it until I get good at it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I actually did it with kettlebells. And actually, when I was watching Dustin's intro video for modernmanualtherapy.com, the newly rebranded OMPT channel, got to plug my new soon-to-be hard launch channel, premium channel. Dustin's contributing lots of videos on that. I thought, wow, that's a really good point. I should video this and send it to an expert like Dustin. He can totally tear my form apart because I think I'm doing great at it, like every other patient. But probably not, since I've never been critiqued.
If you're going to shamelessly plug something, at least say it slow enough so people can understand and hear what you're saying.
ModernManualTherapy.com is the new rebranded OMPT channel. And Dustin is contributing on the Hardstyle KB channel. Previously, Hardstyle channel. And then people were like, what is that, a porn channel? So we had to add the KB to that or the kettlebell to that because, yeah, unless you're...
Well, if you wanted subscribers, that's the way to do it.
Exactly. Right, right. People would be severely disappointed. Like, hey, where is this?
Yeah, and honestly, Urson, when you talked about feedback, I want to lay it out there. I'm by no means an expert. My form, you know, is pretty sloppy. Like my mentor, Lori Kroc, I mentioned her before. I mean, she watched that video. I mean, she could tear me apart of all the inefficiencies, you know, with the swing, with the get up, with the press. But that's okay. You know, each person's perfect is going to be different, but, you know, we're always going to be able to improve. So, yeah, just always be striving, you know, to be better and to be, you know, humble enough to get some feedback. I think that's the biggest thing for sure.
Like any movement, you could always be better.
Exactly.
So Joe, what do you say? Get some kettlebells, start doing some kettlebell training?
Well, I'm at the point where I'm going to take Dustin's advice and you know, maybe find somebody that knows what they're doing before I just go buy some bells.
But, I don't even know you right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Joe, you can critique Gene. Gene, you can critique Joe. Put it up on YouTube.
I'm really not interested in all of ending up like Urson, a bunch of injuries. Yeah.
Getting injections
and going to get some injections. So,
Hashtag screw PT.
Right.
But I will say, like in your all setting, in the outpatient ortho setting, I wish I would have had them when I was working in that realm because I took Part A McKenzie. I'll say that. So, you know, I was doing a lot with a lot of spinal pain and, you know, it was great. It was reducing a lot of symptoms. People were reaching their goals. I loved it. But I was always leaving something on the table. And the way these people were moving once they left the clinic, you know, they would come back. And I felt like kettlebells would have been a very, very helpful tool in that instant to show people, you know, how to tense their spine, how to have, you know, that rigid spinal column. Dragon Door would call that the cylinder of strength. To be able to maintain that and to be able to disassociate your hips and to be able to flex your hips without compromising, you know, the position of your spine. And I taught you know, hip hinging and whatnot. But when you put a lot of weight on that movement pattern, once you have that movement down pat, I mean, it just really, you know, makes a big impact. And I just say that personally, just from how I move now compared, you know, to before I started, you know, using this style of training. So I think it can be very useful, you know, in that outpatient realm.
You know, what I see with the kettlebells, a really unique value in it, aside from the movement part, I think it really helps people to move away from, I think most people are short lever strong and long lever weak.
Sure.
I think if you really look at a lot of injuries, aside from fatigue, I think a lot of injuries happen in a motion that a person doesn't do very often. And I think it increases exponentially when the lever gets longer, which is just pure physics, because the force generation is a lot more as the lever increases. So I think training people gradually to a longer lever, and getting them strong in a longer lever is incredibly valuable as well.
Yeah, right. Definitely.
I think it's one of the things PTs do pretty well is they restore movement patterns, but then they don't look at what these patterns look like under load or, you know, and the thing with a hip hinge and then a deadlift and then a kettlebell swing, they're all various progressions on what is a very, very functional activity. Like, you know, a lot of back schools kind of teach, hey, pick this up with a squat. And that's not really practical when you're like getting groceries out of a trunk.
You know?
You can't exactly squat and get groceries out of your trunk. I mean, a deadlift is much more functional. That's why I like teaching it to everyone. It helps little old ladies get out of chairs if that's your thing, right?
Yeah, it's pretty definitely.
It's an amazing movement.
Yeah, for sure.
I think too, the big thing that's been really powerful for me, I'm just speaking from my experience with them, is that you're able to condense a lot of benefit in a very, very, very short period of time. If you get the hard style kettlebell swing down, you don't have to do a lot. You don't have to spend a lot of time with this, but the benefits, you know, will last a long time. So in terms of, you know, like an exercise routine or a home exercise program, you know, I feel like, you know, we could really simplify things for patients and for ourselves, you know, to be consistent with physical activity and an exercise that's going to be, you know, helpful for them, also helpful for us. So it's just really practical, and that's been a huge impact for me. Just with, you know, as you know, you get busier in the clinic, life gets crazy, exercise kind of slips out on the priority list. But just something so simple as, you know, doing repeated kettlebell swings has really, you know, just been very, very helpful for me.
Awesome. Yeah, I definitely want to see more. I keep telling myself that I'll look more into it. And Wendell keeps bringing up kettlebells as well. So
yep.
Shout out to her. Joe, what do you say? Come on over to the garage and get some kettlebells going.
All right. Yeah, let's just teach each other. And then then we can have Dustin's wife give us injections or something.
Yes.
Nice. The only thing you have to do is train like Dustin did and not train like I did. Dustin trained pretty responsibly, and I did not. So it's just all about variability.
It's all about coaches. Honestly, Lori Kroc was awesome, and then you know, but any you know most certified individuals, you know they've done it. So and that's the big thing. You have to earn the certification. So if someone has those letters behind their name, you know they've earned it. They just didn't take a test or sat through, you know, 2 or 3 days of lectures. So they can definitely, you know, help you out because they've been through the fire.
Awesome, man. Well, I think that's a lot of cool info about kettlebells and just about your story. I mean, that was the fastest 45 minutes that I've experienced in a long, long time.
Yeah, me too. The bourbon helped, though.
Yeah, you definitely got more twang as the conversation went on. So well done. So Urson, you know, I just mentioned the garage a little bit. Should we make an announcement now, or should we kind of tease it and wait another few episodes?
Oh, we might as well do it now. I was figuring we'd do it now, just because we talked about the garage so much, and it seems to be an episode for shameless plugs because we don't plug enough.
That's very true. We've been told we don't plug enough of our stuff. So why not? Since it's the inaugural.
You sound like a West Virginian, Gene.
What are you drinking, Gene?
I think the problem is not enough of anything.
Right.
So, you know, we're launching something. I think that that's very important and very big and very exciting, calling it the Garage Series. So, Ersin, please introduce it.
Well, the Garage Series is named after Gene's one and only garage, actually. And it is going to be the hub of some very elite courses, and it's going to be courses unlike you've ever seen before. Not only will they be in a garage, but I will be giving one of the first seminars there. It will be an eclectic approach to upper and lower quarter. It'll be the first weekend of December of this year, unless Gene actually scheduled another course before that. But I will be one of the first then in that case. But I'm really excited to launch the eclectic approach down in Maryland and in Baltimore particularly. I've been invited there by several groups, and I'm glad that I can do this for UpDoc Media. And, you know, we're probably going to do we're going to combine it with a course. Probably we'll do a PT pub night. Maybe we'll even do a live podcast, actually, and not just like we'll actually all be together instead of me just being in Buffalo while Gene and Joe are in Baltimore. And I think it's going to be really cool, and hopefully it will be a regular thing.
Yeah, we're really, really excited, and you will be the first. So just to paint a picture, when we say garage, it's not a little garage attached to the house.
More like a comedy cellar.
It really is. It's at my house, and it's, you know, my house is surrounded by 6 acres of land, and the garage is like a 1,000-square-foot garage lined with cedar wood. And it's going to be outfitted for courses and then some other stuff. And, it's got a very unique scenic perspective than most courses, because most courses are in cities or hotels, but you're actually surrounded by, we're kind of up on a hill, and you have trees, a really cool landscape across the street. There's 3 big silos and a farm. But we're also like 25 minutes from or 30 minutes from BWI and the major airports in DC. So it's a very central location, got plenty of parking and places for you guys to stay. So like Ersin said, this will be the first of many exclusive courses. We'll only be kind of reaching out to the best in the field for different subjects, and really excited for Ersin to kick it off.
You can come try out some Edge Mobility products and some ARCs.
Damn right.
All right.
Shameless plugs.
Just keep it going. You can, you definitely can, except it's an open field immediately here, but there's woods down below that's also on our property.
All right.
So there's a lot of cool stuff, and there's a Chipotle 10 minutes away.
Boom.
Nice.
So we will cater with Chipotle, and we will have gourmet coffee. So we're going luxury. This is luxury
garage.
That's
right. How many other courses are catered by Chipotle? Come on, people. Seriously.
Me. Yeah, seriously.
It's usually like, hey, lunch is on your own. Like, there's a McDonald's down the road, and whatever you decide to do, be back by 1.
Yeah.
Exactly. No such things. So we will, by the time this podcast is live, we'll have a sign-up page ready. We're only going to take about 20 people because we want it to be very, very hands-on and still not squished into it. It's a big garage, but we don't want it to feel like we're just stuffing people in. So sign up when you can, when you see the sign up, and we look forward to hosting some really cool people. Joe, are you coming?
It's on my calendar now. Thanks for telling me before the announcement. Well, thanks for giving me the heads up.
The first person to sign up. Nice.
So for our listeners, a little insider information here. If you stayed to the end of this podcast and heard all this,
everyone turned it off by now.
About last year, when we would do these podcasts, we went through a phase when Joe would log in because he was working late. You know, he's a clinic owner. If you're a clinic owner, you're usually there pretty late. And he would have absolutely no idea who the guest was or what the topic was. And it was always...
All of a sudden we're talking about vaginas, Joe realizes.
It was that episode with Sandy Hilton when he came on, and, you know, he logs in to Skype, and it was us talking about some kind of pelvic health something. And just, I remember him saying, like, what the hell did I just log into?
I thought I was in the wrong conversation. Wrong room.
Whoa, sorry. Did I get on the wrong podcast here? So we switched running gags to Ersin just introducing people and butchering people's names.
Right. Yes. Now Gene's got to totally I don't know. We got to do something for Gene.
I welcome it fully.
Like, not podcast with Gene sometime? I don't know. I don't know. It probably wouldn't go as smoothly.
His calls to action are very impressive. So I think you should stick with that, Gene. Your hashtags are amazing.
You like those?
Oh, yeah.
I love them.
I'm glad to hear, because they're usually spontaneous and just come out of nowhere.
Yeah, I can tell.
I don't know if that's a good thing or not.
What was the hashtag again for this week?
Screw PT.
Screw PT.
No, that's Urson's
right,
hashtag.
That's mine, apparently.
Ours is hashtag Project PT.
This was taken out of context, just so everyone knows. That will not.
If they listen to the whole episode, it is fully in context. All right, so Dustin, again, man, thanks for joining us. Remind us what's the video channel that you're doing with Urson?
So the channel is Hardstyle Kettlebell Channel. So it's going to be kind of teaching the fundamentals of hardstyle kettlebell training, but also how we can adapt that to, you know, the clinical setting. So I mainly have experience, you know, with older adults, but we'll, you know, be able to apply some of those things to people, you know, that are working with the younger population. So we'll show regressions, progressions of all the different, you know, movements, and yeah, and just, you know, show everyone how to use this amazing tool in the clinic. So that can be found at modernmanualtherapy.com. Yeah, and just sign up and you'll get access to it.
Very cool. And if people have questions for you on Twitter or email or anything like that?
Yeah, so I'd say easiest thing is just go to dustinjonespt.com. It's dustinjonespt.com, and you know, you can contact me, you know, Twitter links on there, all that fun stuff. I'm also thinking about doing a podcast like you all, geared towards geriatrics or, you know, PTs working with older adults. So if you are interested in that, you know, go to dustinjonespt.com. There's a link. And yeah, just let me know if anyone would like to hear that, because, you know, we are kind of the black sheep of the PT realm. So I want to bring some information out to the peoples working with
Jared. Who's that? West Virginia people?
Yeah, that is true. I will claim that. I am a West Virginian. We are the black sheep of America, but I am proud of it.
There you go.
Yeah. One time I spent New Year's with one of my buddies from West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And do you know what? They all shoot like shotguns in the air when it's New Year's.
Well, that's true. That happens. I live in Columbus, Ohio, downtown, and the same thing actually happens here as well. So inner cities, I can't say every, you know, city, but in Columbus, you know, they're shooting some guns on New Year's. Granted, they're usually automatic rifles versus, you know, versus shotguns in West Virginia. Yeah.
Well, we're in Baltimore. We shoot guns every day. We don't need a special holiday. Okay.
Great.
So
Buffalo's sounding pretty great right now.
And by the way, if you're coming to the course, you are nowhere near Baltimore. So don't fear. This is not the Wire. You're gonna be out towards
so
the country.
Know. I've been getting into the Wire. I'm like, do I really want to teach there? But
Relax.
Gene's assured me.
Urson's like, I put Baltimore on my course list. Should I change it? I was like, yes. Baltimore, Washington region.
Put Baltimore, Washington area, yeah.
Oh. All right, man. Well, thanks again for joining us. Urs, Joe, any closing thoughts?
Go lift heavy things, people. But do it under supervision. Under supervision. It. Do it right.
That sounds good to me, Gene.
Well,
I think there's a lot of potential. A lot of potential, and I think it can be a good thing, as long as people do it responsibly and don't give all kettlebells a bad name because they use them like Urson.
That's right.
don't lift and drive, people. Lift responsibly.
Don't get your bell rung. That's. That's the lesson from Urson in his wrist.
Screw PT.
Awesome. We're gonna have to cut that out. All right. So thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. Check out our other podcasts at updocmedia.com. We have the Strength Doc with Dr. John Russin and Running Story with Amanda Loudon launched, and Jerry's podcast, Business Baseball and Bourbon, will be coming out very soon. We've gotten a lot of good feedback on those two podcasts, and you know, they definitely are very interesting and got some really cool stories and context. As always, you know, we really appreciate all the conversations on Twitter, the emails that we get. I know I hear stories every week about somebody telling me about how they listen, and it's kind of mind blowing. Some of the cool stories of people that said they listen to this podcast. So thanks a lot. And if you listened to a couple podcasts ago, you know, you were our sponsors. We dedicated that episode to you because, we're really talking to ourselves, which if we wanted to do that, we would just have a phone call and wouldn't have a podcast. So we really appreciate our audience, our listeners, the DPT students, all our private practice listeners, and our chiropractors. Yes, chiropractors, if we're already going with Screw PT, why the hell not? So everyone that's listening, fitness professionals, we really appreciate it. And all the feedback is really important to us. So leave us a review with that said on iTunes. Mm-hmm. Really helps us know what you like, what you don't like, and keeps us up on the charts. So again, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you again next time.